Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, journalist Faith Saley is an approval junkie. From grade point averages to beauty pageants to first husbands to the television industry, Saley has lived a life of trying to win the approval of others. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Saley is a journalist, writer, actor, improviser, and television and radio personality. You can see her regularly on CBS Sunday Morning and listen to her as a panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Her new book is a collection of essays titled Approval Junkie, Adventures in Caring Too Much. Faith Saley, welcome to the big table. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Do I look okay for the radio?
You look great.
Okay, just checking. Thanks. You know what I love is you called it my new book with emphasis on new, as I've written many. And
well,
this is my
first
too, so it just sounded cool. Thank you. Maybe that's auspicious.
I really liked the book, and I enjoyed it. It was very personal. As a humorist and as a, you know, you've done a lot. You've been a comedian, stand-up. But this is, I mean, you're telling a lot about your personal life, your stories, your relationships, sex.
Lactation. My mother's pelvic floor is in there.
Exactly.
You really read it.
I really read it. But was it hard for you? Because you're always putting yourself out front, but this is a different kind of personal.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, on CBS Sunday Morning, I do commentaries, but they are... Usually, I think the topics are fairly innocuous. You know, I'm championing the word whom, or I'm suggesting people don't shake hands, they fist bump so they don't get sick, right? Although I will say that it's amazing. People will find a way to write hate mail about anything.
Yeah.
I'm like, you guys, it's just my opinion on the Sabbath. But you're right. It's not so personal as a commentarian. You know, what I commentate about is not so personal. And this is very revelatory. But I have to say it was not difficult to reveal that stuff. Maybe that's part of my approval junkiness. I really like sharing stories. I mean, the reason I wrote the book is because I got to this point in my life where I had so many happy endings, not in the dirty way, unfortunately, but so many big questions answered. I was in my early 40s. I still am. And like the big questions, will I fall in love with the right person? Will I become a parent? What should I be doing with my life? Where should I live? All of those questions were finally answered. I think people who are probably smarter than I am answer them in their 20s or 30s, but I had finally answered mine.
That's doubtful.
Really?
I think that a lot of what you read in here, and it was funny because right before we started, you know, you said that I'm not necessarily the target demographic when you're talking about this book.
You aren't, right.
But I really felt connected to it and related because seeking approval is something that's human. I mean, it is this concept that we all want it. Obviously, we're in the media, so you want it. You want people to like you, this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
But there really is around approval. There really does seem to be it's a relatable concept.
Right. But I think you're very honest to admit that. You would be amazed at how... So when I was writing the book, and what are you working on? I'm working on a book. What's it called? Approval Junkie. And some people are like, really? I wouldn't have thought that of you. You seem so confident, or you're so, you know, successful. And it's not, like you said, it's human. It's not a matter of being insecure. I mean, wanting validation is like a basic human need. And I have little kids. My kids are 1 and 3. And you see that if you're a parent, like you applaud them when they eat their vegetables. And at some point in our lives, we're supposed to graduate from not only needing that, but enjoying it. And I don't know, I kind of wanted to write, these essays about the lessons I've learned, but I also kind of wanted to do a little defense of seeking approval. Like
right.
a big, fat high five feels good. I like the sting of a high five.
Well, you kind of call out, early on in the book, you call out some of the celebrities like Kanye West,
oh
who's like, I don't care. Or when someone says, I don't care.
They care
lying.
The
right.
most.
Right.
They care the most. You know, there's like that spectrum. There's the Kanye West who tweets that he doesn't give an S, you know.
Right.
About what people think, and is constantly in Twitter wars. And then you have the famous Sally Field moment, right? Like, you like me right now, you like me. And that, I actually, when I was working on the book, I went back, because, you know, it's a trope in our,
right.
you know, people always say, you like me, you really, really like me. I went back to see it. It was in 1985. It was sort of Places in the Heart, she won the Oscar. And it's really moving. It's not just cute, it's moving. People in the audience were crying. And I think it's because of what you said. Seeking approval is resonant. And by the way, this is not a prescriptive book. This is not
right.
a self-help book. These are extremely unique stories.
These are your essays. They're humorous. But they do tell your story.
Right. But I doubt, for example, you asked your gay brother to demonstrate the best right. way to give a killer.
No. Not do that. But
or, you know, wore a sequined miniskirt ordered from the Avon catalog to win your high school beauty pageant. But like you said, there is one hopes for some universality among the themes.
Well, approval or validation. I mean, like you said, it's a human need. But at a certain point, I mean, there it is in balance, almost like the idea of addiction. I mean, you call the book Approval Junkie, but the concept that it can get out of whack where it almost drives your life. And that's what you're talking about early on, not even just about being excelling in school and having to get great grades, and you had such a great academic career, but also like in Hollywood, which is where approval gets... That's where it starts to get really hard. And then in our relationships. So there's a lot going on here, but it really is about making sure that that's kind of in balance.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the book is about my evolving relationship with approval. Evolving, I hope. I call myself a recovering approval junkie because I still have approval, but it's been a journey in figuring out from whom is it worth seeking approval. And that list has dwindled. So yeah, if you're a performer, you want it from audience members you've never met. You want applause. You want laughter. When I was an actor in L.A. for a decade, you want to be cast, right? You want people to think you're the prettiest or the skinniest or the funniest or whateverest. And now, you mentioned two shows I work on, CBS Sunday Morning and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. I was a massive fan of those shows before I ever got on them. So when I get good feedback from my colleagues, from my bosses, that feels fantastic.
Feels good,
it's
right?
worth winning their approval, right?
Right.
It's the ex-husband, I call him my husband, whose approval right. I could never really get. It's not worth trying to get his. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm just far less promiscuous in seeking it. But also, it's the root of approval is that word prove, and I love proving stuff to myself. Now, that has evolved too. Am I trying to prove to myself I can weigh 95 pounds like I wanted to in high school? No.
But it's interesting because grades were a big part of your life, and you're a Rhodes Scholar.
You've been on the phone with my dad, I can tell.
Right. But looks, I mean, there's a great essay in here about really seeking out to be the beauty pageant winner. To me,
Miss Aphrodite.
Right.
Yes.
But there was that element of approval where, you know, didn't go right the first time. You're like, it's almost sometimes mistaken for hard work or perseverance, but you really wanted to win that thing.
I really wanted to be the goddess of beauty and love. 1989. I don't mean to brag. Yeah, no, I did. It was, and if you who are listening are surprised that a public high school had a beauty pageant right. for its girls every year, then you were probably on the chilly side of the War of Northern Aggression. Right. This was important, right? The boys played football, and the girls wanted to be Miss Aphrodite. It was like, as soon as I got into high school, I want to make straight A's, and I want an A for Aphrodite. So I entered every year. And I chronicle my journey towards that tiara, which I still have.
And you know, that's great. It's interesting in the story because every time you're reading one of your essays, you're thinking about the approval junkie kind of mystique that you're talking about. And in your life, you were already in commercials. You're already moving. You were doing stuff down in, was it Atlanta?
Yeah.
Downtown Atlanta. And you were in productions.
Like a kid actor.
Yeah, while the other kids were doing the sort of normal high school stuff. So the beauty pageant wasn't just about being the prettiest. It was about letting people see you and then having them validate you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Because all the other kids in my school were doing normal, you know, what you should be doing, like cheerleading and playing in the band. And I was leaving to go sing, you know, neutered versions of Sondheim downtown because I was one of those kid actors. But, you know, I give a ton of credit to my editor. I like to tell people this. My editor, her name is Suzanne O'Neill, and she edited Mindy Kaling's book and Jim Gaffigan. And I love saying that because it's sort of like, if you like their books, maybe you like mine.
It's like a walking Amazon.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. But she kept encouraging me to dig deeper. So this chapter that I write about winning my high school beauty pageant, I thought, come on, this is just fun. This is my Napoleon Dynamite chapter. Like, do we really need to dig? What's there to dig for? And, you know, I realized because she was, the question was, why do I still tell people that I was Miss Aphrodite in 1989? Or why do I still have a tiara from high school? I mean, it makes me like a character in a Tennessee Williams play, right? Just hanging on to my youth. And yet I realized, you know, I do have a wistfulness about that particular episode in my life, because my senior year when I won this silly high school pageant, I had these two goals, right? I wanted to captivate the student body. I wanted everyone to see what I could do. And I also wanted to lose weight that year. So right. I lost 45 pounds. It was, you know, again, immoderate, right? We're talking about that. And it was, I think of that episode in my life, and I think a lot of people can relate to this, even if you don't have a tiara, that it was the last time I felt like I could get what I want. I could achieve these goals, which at that time were captivating the student body and dominating my body, by hard work and determination. And I feel like that's a faith that belongs to the young, because you learn soon enough that working hard and wishing hard, they don't always get you what you want.
But
you don't end up
fulfilled or you're left feeling empty.
Yeah.
That's a big part of this book.
Yeah.
Faith Saley's my guest tonight. The book is called Approval Junkie, Adventures in Caring Too Much. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and more with Faith. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. My guest at the big table tonight, Faith Saley. You can catch her on CBS Sunday Morning. And wait, don't tell me.
It is a big table. Your listeners should know. This is a literal name for the segment.
The book is called Approval Junkie, Adventures in Caring Too Much. You know, before the break, we talked about your editor. And your editor pushing you to go deeper than just the sort of ironic stories, I won Miss Aphrodite in 1989.
Right. Eyelash extensions.
Right. It's a great move for the book because it's, you know, it's expected because of your background and because of your work on CBS Sunday Morning, and even Wait, Don't Tell Me. We know you to be humorous. We know it to be fun. What you really do as you peel back is a much more thoughtful, philosophical look at life. And I think that's what makes this book work.
Thank you.
I'm curious, when I asked about being personal at the top of the interview, was it hard to go deeper? Was it hard to go past just the humor and what you're used to writing?
It was only hard in the sense that sometimes I didn't know if there was going to be something there. So I'm very glad she prodded me. Now, there are chapters. So there's a chapter called The Exorcism because my ex-husband, and a real nadir. Is that how you pronounce that word? Some people say nadir.
Yeah.
A real low point in my marriage.
Just go straight to the definition.
Right. Suggested that maybe I should consider having an exorcism.
Because you were depressed, because it felt like you weren't in sync early in your marriage.
Yes. And by that time, we had actually been together for a long time. We did that brilliant thing where we got married because that would probably fix our relationship.
Right.
Yeah. Then we should have had a baby right after that, right? That would really fix it. But I was so far gone into some darkness then that I was actually, in a way, flattered by his suggestion that if maybe I had, because he said, I feel like there's some darkness in you that you can't control. Maybe we could get rid of it. And he wasn't joking. And so I sort of wanted to demonstrate my open-mindedness about self-improval, right?
Yeah.
Willingness to improve myself. And I was like, oh, I guess I'd consider it. Now, I did not have a literal exorcism, but I went to this healing place that my sister-in-law suggested. And I was there, as is my wont, to like crush enlightenment. I was going to, you know, dominate in yoga.
I was going to be approved.
Right. I was going to have an out-of-body experience if there is one to have. And of course, that doesn't happen when you try to like grasp spirituality so hard, it will elude you. And so I thought I will write a funny chapter about that because, hey, isn't it crazy to have your spouse ask you if you would consider having an exorcism, and let's take it from there. And then I realized in writing it that there really was an exorcism that happened.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a metaphorical one, but I went to this healing. It's an Ayurvedic healing center that's like ancient Indian, the system of balancing your body. It's a lot of oil on your third eye. And I did this thing called Kaya Kalpa. And when I arrived at this healing center, I thought, well, what do I need to surrender? I need to get rid of my fear about my career and my marriage ending. And I need to get rid of anger. I was resentful towards my husband. I was resentful towards Hollywood for not casting me. And I was presumptuous about what I needed to release. And it turned out that I needed to release a profound amount of grief because my mother, I was in my mid-30s and my mother had died in my 20s. I knew consciously I was extremely sad about that, but I didn't realize that I had been holding on to the grief about my mother dying, and I'd sort of made it the story of my life, that I wasn't letting myself be happy because somehow if I were happy, that would diminish the loss of her. So this chapter, to your point,
it started off as a joke, but it went deeper. And you're right, because not only that, but there was the part about your husband and taming. And then there was the part about your mom. I mean, but that seems to be what the takeaway is from this book, is that there are things that we hide or push away and that we don't think about. And maybe we're thinking it's this problem, but it's this problem. Or maybe we're thinking because of the fact that we're just consumed by approval, whether it's in our relationships or whether it's in our jobs, and we're not really paying attention to the things that are actually holding us back.
Yeah. Here's where you're definitely not my target audience, but there's the penultimate chapter in the book is about breastfeeding, which I call Breastfeeding Sucks. And I did sort of wonder why I didn't love it. Some people love it. They breastfeed their kids till their bar mitzvah, right? But I did sort of wonder why I was doing it well into the second year of my daughter's life. And of course, you get in our culture right now, you get a lot of approval for that, right? Like, you're making your kids spontaneously speak Mandarin if you breastfeed them, right? And I was thinking, I mean, I was doing it while I was writing the book, and I sort of decided to dive into, why am I still doing this if I don't love it? And I realized it wasn't just about approval. It's clearly not about my daughter's approval. She's not going to remember, or society's, or my own. It was because motherhood is so tough, and I was seeing it as a sort of a metaphor for motherhood,
yeah.
like keeping bonded to her. I was afraid to lose that bond. Like, who am I as your mother if you don't have to turn to me to keep yourself alive in a way?
But it also was revelatory in the way that motherhood is kind of the way that you've been able to, I want to say, recover. You're not an approval junkie because your motherhood has changed your perspective on life.
You are so right.
That's how the book plays. No, you're right.
Well, thanks. But I mean, nobody has sort of stated that as explicitly, and you're a dude. And I think you're even a hetero dude. And like, so thank you for such a intuitive and close reading. Right. I mean, I start out the book with this thing that happened to me when I was an actor in LA, where I went to this acting guru who was supposed to help everybody like nail your auditions, and I read my lines for her, and it was like, this is like 10 years ago, it was $130 for a half an hour. Well, it was 25 minutes, and that's like $4,000 today, right? And I read my lines to her, and she just sort of cocked her head kind of compassionately and concerned, and I thought she was going to say like, wow, why aren't you a massive star? Like, you don't need to be here with me. And yet she said, why aren't you as pretty as I want you to be?
And you took that to be, okay, I got to really examine. But
yeah, well, I was thinking, and at that point in my life, I was thinking, oh, why aren't I as pretty as I want me to be? That's what Hollywood will do to you. And so, I was worried she was going to tell me I had to become a Scientologist something. And she's like, you need bangs. You need bangs. And I was like, bam, like what a prescription. I can do that. But as I was leaving this $130 session, it was like an afterthought. And she was like, you know what? Do you have kids? And I said, no, I was in my mid-30s. Of course, in your mid-30s in LA, you're auditioning to play the mother of middle schoolers. Right. But I did not have kids. And I said, no, I want to. And she said, this woman who had never met me before, she said, you know, you have this hardness about you and this desperation, which was true. I was desperate. Competitive, and I was trying too hard. And she said, you're going to have kids one day, and I think I'll see you again, and you're going to be softer, and you're going to be happier, and you're going to know what's important. And I've never seen that woman since, but you're right, Justin, because you get to the end of the book, and my kids are, in a way, what has saved me. Because if you're a parent and if you seek approval from your kids, that's just masochistic. I mean, you just need to make sure they're happy and healthy, right?
And maybe it draws out a little bit of, you know, when your approval metric is out of balance. When you're with your kids, you're like, oh, you know what? I don't need to really worry about approval at this point.
It focuses you, right?
When you're a parent, that's what it does. Approval Junkies, the book, Adventures in Caring Too Much. Faith Saley is my guest tonight, journalist and television radio personality. You can see her as a contributor on CBS Sunday Morning and a panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Let's take a break for the news. We'll come back more with this conversation. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest at the big table tonight, Faith Saley. Her first book, Approval Junkie, Adventures in Caring Too Much. Faith, of course, is a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning and also a panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So you come through Chicago to do that show. Continuing to talk about this concept, and I really like the concept, the idea of almost being addicted to approval.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about tonight. That's what the essays in the book are about. And it's really honest because as we sort of began this conversation, it's a human necessity, yet we almost see it as a weakness. It's weird that like we will say, oh no, I don't need anybody's approval.
Right.
I'm on my own. I don't need anything. But that's almost like denying a fact that we do need some, but sometimes it's too much.
And it connects us to each other, approval. You know? I mean, you know how you give star ratings to your Uber drivers?
Right.
Do you know that when you get out of the car, they rate you too? They do. And if you get a bad rating from your Uber driver, you're not going to get picked up, my friends. Not in the rain and not in the cold. So there are many good things about seeking approval. Like, it's okay to make straight A's or write thank you notes or know people's names. But one nice thing about seeking approval sometimes is that it does make you engage with people, makes you listen to their stories. And if you want someone's approval, you probably ought to connect with that person.
You have a chapter about moving your career from being an actress and trying to get into sitcoms to working on the other side where you're actually hosting programs and working in radio and interviewing people. But that taught you something that helped with approval, which was listening.
Yeah. I mean, you know this well. Not only did my career take a huge turn when I became someone who listened rather than talked, but it changed my life. I mean, becoming a good listener is... I think a lot of people think they're good listeners, but really what we want to do, because we're human, is share our stories. Okay, so you tell me yours, and now I'm going to tell you mine. Oh, that happened to me. Let me tell you mine. And if you listen as a job, it forces you to be quiet. Like, my job when I was interviewing people was not to interview a politician and then tell him what I thought. And when I let that sort of seep into my life and had interactions with, say, my now husband, you know, if we didn't agree on something, if I could remind myself, this is his time to talk and this is your time to listen. It's not your time to wait to interrupt, you know. But also, you find out that when people really feel like you're listening, you can ask them anything. And I don't mean that in an exploitative way. It's like a superpower. It's right? You know this.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And I always go away from a conversation where I did far more listening than talking, feeling like I learned more and much more fulfilled. Like, one of my favorite moments was when I got to interview Joan Rivers. I've interviewed lots and lots of people just like you have. She was a machine. She always delivered the funny, and she you could ask her, you know, anything sort of crazy. But I very sincerely, because I think I earned her trust in an interview, I said, are you ever going to think you're pretty enough? You know, because she usually has one-liners right. For everything. And it was a really nice, honest moment. It made me sad, actually. She was like, no, I do this because I don't think I'm ever enough. And right. Of course, this was this amazing icon of a woman.
Well, it's hard because approval, it really does play, and plays a big part in the role. And we know this, people who get in front of cameras, get in front of audiences, who have success with that. And then there's also the side of people who have less success with that have to go through the audition process. And you talk about this in the book, about walking into these stone cold rooms and having this this constant evaluation of your career every time you read a line. But that whole thing, that has to mess with your approval metric. I mean, just the concept of always being evaluating,
but
always
don't
being judged.
Everybody can relate to that.
Yeah.
Even if you're not trying to be an actor or stand-up comedian, nowadays, much more so than a decade ago when I was acting and auditioning, it's social media. It's like instant judgment all the time. And if people say they don't care about approval, believe me, they're checking their likes. Oh my God, I got retweeted, therefore I am.
That
you know what I mean?
When you put up that picture on Instagram and nobody likes it. Everybody knows that feeling.
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't
Nobody
change your
anything.
World or anything, but it's just that emotional feeling that you have.
Well, it's sad,
like,
trombone.
Oh.
Yeah. And you know, they say,
I
host a show on PBS, and my co-host is, and we interviewed scientists about movies. My co-host is a scientist. She's a neuroscientist. And she was saying, your brain literally, you get little hits of dopamine all day long when someone responds to you on social media. It's validation.
Yeah.
I mean, we're on a diet of it.
So we've found a way in our society
to turn us all into approval.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually an epidemic. This may not be prescriptive, but it's at least warning us of a world that we live in. You know, like I mentioned at the beginning of this interview, it's very personal. You have a whole section about your first husband, the husband, but about, you know, he was in the business. He was in Hollywood. It was tough. There's a, you know, somewhat heartbreaking passage where he writes a role for you.
Oh my gosh.
And then it gets cast. It's like right out of a like just a bad show where you're just like, someone else got the part.
He created
a role for you.
Right.
And
my name is Faith.
It.
The role was, I mean, the character was called Hope, and I still didn't get it. Anyway.
Talking about that and around Wilson. But the other part of it was, you know, at 40 years old, trying to get pregnant.
Yeah.
And you go through this and you talk about some very emotional stuff with miscarriages and going through the treatment, going through the IVF treatment. For anyone who has done that, knows the mental and emotional trauma.
It's a lot on the partner and both, but not just
the, you know, the waiting to see if it works, but all of the injections and
the
visits and everything. It's emotional torture. And that too, as you try to apply what you talked about, that idea of like, I'm going to roll up my sleeves and I'm going to work hard to get this done.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just out of your control.
Yeah, absolutely. That chapter, thanks for mentioning it. I think it might be my favorite chapter. It's called Ovary Achiever,
yeah.
An Approval Junkie's Guide to Fertility. And what I loved about it is like, if my children read nothing else I've ever written, I feel like if they could read, I'm going to get emotional. If they could read that chapter, they would know how much I wanted them. I wanted them my whole life. I just didn't know how they would come to me. And I also love that chapter because this is how life is. It is the very funny, like the fact that when I was doing IUI, which is artificial insemination, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't want my husband to have to take things into his own hands. I was going to be like, you know, I'm approval junkie. I'm the best partner ever. Like, we're going to have sex and collect your sample in a cup and I'm going to walk it to the doctor. Like, I don't want you in a room with some disgusting right. sticky magazines. So, you know, so I had this vial in between my very small cleavage because that's like the best temperature in a running bra, and I'm like race walking to my doctor across Madison Avenue and I bump into a friend. I mean, I didn't slosh genetic material on him, but you know, and I had to like make up small right. talk when I really wanted to be like,
I've got something.
Future children are between my breasts. I gotta get to the doctor. But like really, and then my husband's motility, he was like, I think his sperm count was like 33 million, which of course right. I texted my family immediately.
You're proud. My
yeah. dad called him 33 mil for like years, like his son-in-law was a rapper. And there's so much funny in that process that bumps up against the desperately sad, the babies that I lost.
Right.
And that's, I love that I could combine them both in that chapter. And the chapter begins on my second husband. My first date with him was the night before I started the process of freezing my eggs
right.
at 39. And so, you know, the next day he was texting me like, hey, what are you doing? You know, what are you wearing?
Where are you?
In a hospital gown in my orientation for freezing my
They're
eggs.
Extracting my eggs right now.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Which, of course, by the way, I did for CBS Sunday morning. Like, I had the cameras there when they did the egg retrieval. And yeah, I put on makeup because, you know, approval junkie.
I mean, yeah, I was going to say, I mean, let's like there's, I mean, even the emotional and personal stuff that you've had to go through your life, I mean, even then you are sharing it with an audience.
Yeah,
you want
no,
them,
that's
you
true.
Want them to write in and be like, Faith, you go get it.
Look
you know?
At those.
Yeah, look at that.
Your uterine lining is so thick.
Well, it's a great book, a collection of essays. It's
Thank
called
you.
Approval Junkie, Adventures in Caring Too Much. The author is Faith Saley. Faith, thanks so much for sharing your story. And thanks for coming on the download.
Thank you.
It.
It's my pleasure.